Okay, everybody, good day. Welcome to the Wikibon Peer Insight Research Meeting, where practitioners discuss challenging problems in the data center. I'm your host and moderator, Dave Vellante. Today we're pleased to have Justin Bell, network engineer at Strand. Welcome, Justin. Please say hello to the Wikibon community.
Hi, everyone.
Let me just get the housekeeping out of the way. If you're not speaking on the call, please mute your line by hitting star 6 to mute and star 6 to unmute if you want to participate. Everybody's welcome to do that, and we encourage you to do so. This call is being recorded and will last 1 hour. And if anybody's on Twitter, please use the pound Wikibon hash so it will feed into our social media outlets. Headquartered in Madison, Wisconsin, Strand Associates is a multidiscipline engineering design firm with nearly 400 employees and 11 offices in the U.S. And we're going to talk today about how Justin and his team architected a remote office backup and recovery solution and some of the challenges and issues that they faced. So, Justin, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your role at Strand, please?
Sure. I'm a network engineer. We have a pretty small IT staff. There's five full-time IT staff in Madison, and then we have two full-time IT staff in different remote offices. So there's only seven of us total serving all 400 users, and that's kind of where we sit. I'm in charge of the backup and recovery along with some other projects. So that's kind of where what I do.
So how did you handle backup for your, I guess it was maybe eight or so remote offices back before you started this project?
Well, prior to starting this project, we had basically a tape drive in every office, along with a set of tapes, a backup server running backup exec, and every night we would run a differential tape. And then on Fridays, we would run a full backup tape. Now, because we only had two remote admins, that meant that six of the sites, had an engineer or a secretary or someone like that running their backup tapes. They were responsible for swapping the tapes in and out of the autoloaders every week and then making sure the correct tape got out of the office.
So... Did you have any sense of, well, so how'd that go? I mean, engineers and secretaries must have been happy backing up, right?
Well, yeah, you can imagine the thrill that they got out of swapping out tapes once a week. They would go on vacation or whatever and they'd miss tapes, or they would just forget or get busy and they would miss swapping out tapes. So if you take a successful week, being that all of the correct tapes got swapped out and all the tape jobs ran across the offices, we only had a 40% success rate. So it did not go well at all.
So 40% of the backups succeeded. And
yeah.
What was recovery like?
Recovery was pretty painful. You had to, depending on what you needed to recover, you might have to call an offsite, storage location for the tapes, which was different for every office, obviously, because they're spread out geographically. Or you had to try to talk that engineer into finding the correct tape that you needed, putting the tape in the tape drive, and then checking to see if it was right. If it was wrong, you had to call that engineer back up again, make sure they swapped it out, and then when you were done with the restore, if you found the stuff that you needed, you had to call the engineer to remind them to put the correct tape back in. So the amount of time that it took on our civil engineers was getting pretty bad. And, management never liked to see them billing, general time to help us do restores and stuff like that when they could have been working and billing out to a client.
Right, okay. So you had this sort of productivity nightmare going on and you weren't backing up and protecting your data adequately. So can you talk about how you architected a solution to this problem?
Sure. We pretty much decided that because as an IT organization and as a whole, our group was trying to centralize more and more of our services. things like license servers, file sharing, stuff like that, trying to do more and more out of the Madison office. And we decided that this would be a pretty good place to do that as well. We decided we wanted to have off-site replication from each of the offices to come to Madison, and then at some point it was going to be like a phase two of the project to have all the Madison's data go to another site kind of as a backup DR for Madison. We also decided, though, that because the offices were only connected with one or two T1s, that it wasn't going to be practical to just replicate the data to Madison. We needed to have a second site or a second copy of all the data available in each office in case something happened to, you know, the primary server and the primary storage in that site. We also decided that we needed something rather inexpensive because some of these offices only had 10 to 15 people in them. So, you know, going out and spending $100,000 on backup for 15 people didn't really make economical sense. So we needed to also find something that was pretty cheap. And that was basically what started off the whole project.
So can you talk about some of the business drivers here? Was it, you know, RTO, RPO? What was really the metric that you were looking at, or metrics?
Sure. Well, in terms of, I mean, trying to justify, we knew that it was a problem in IT. We were the ones having to deal with it and trying to find stuff to recover. And then, you know, hopefully that worked. Quite a few times it didn't work where we couldn't get back what, you know, someone had wanted. So in terms of metrics going to the CFO, we looked at the potential loss that we could face if a disaster happened. And we really used, you know, worst case scenarios. So I went through our backup logs and all the logs that we kept of when backups failed and pulled out some instances where, you know, there were 3-4 days where there wasn't a good backup because there was a tape drive that was out or because the person was out of the office and hadn't swapped out any tapes and we didn't know. Added up that time for the RPO. Then we added up the, you know, some of the worst case scenarios for RTO, like having to rebuild the server in the operating system before you could even start to run the backup job. We added those together. We ran some numbers on how much money we would lose if an office and all their employees were standing still for that amount of time. And we used that as, look, this is the amount of money that you could lose having a one-day outage that wiped out the server. That helped a lot. We also laid out to the CFO a clear differentiation between the current RPO, RTO, and the proposed. And I think that was really important because, you know, when we're writing out our memos to say why we need this, a lot of the acronyms and the numbers and stuff get lost. And so we needed to lay out really clearly what the difference was going to be and how it could help.
So is it fair to say your goal was to take RPO, say, from, I don't know, days to hours, or
I'm sorry, what was that?
So what was the rough sort of scope here? Were you able to take your RPO from you know, days or weeks to hours or minutes, or where'd you come from and where'd you go?
Yeah, basically when we laid it out, the old system, best case scenario, the RPO was 1 day. Worst case scenario, the office goes out, it's 7 days. And that's if everything was correct. So we pointed out a case where it wasn't right, where we didn't have a full backup for a week. So, you know, we were looking at potential RPO of having, like, you know, a week. So you got to go two weeks back for the Friday and then do differentials for a week. RTO, we were looking at least a day because you have to put all your service packs and all your stuff on your Windows server, install backup exec, which you probably don't have the install there if all your file shares are dead. So you got to figure out a way to get that. Hopefully you have a CD, but if your building burnt down or something like that, you wouldn't have that CD. Then setting up your tape drive, first getting your hands on a tape drive, hopefully you have one, setting up your tape drive, getting your tapes in, hopefully they work, and restoring them, you were looking at least a day. And that is probably best case scenario. If we have a local failure, our RPO is within a minute. Usually it's less than that. The solution that we have does write splitting, so the backup copy is always getting updated. Our TO would just be, I don't know, if it was just a local failure, like the server started on fire, would just be the amount of time that it takes for us to hook up a replacement server via iSCSI and use DFS to put the file share in where it needs to go. So you're talking about, you know, maybe a half an hour once we know about it and we start getting the wheels turning. Now, if it's a situation where the whole office burns down, our RPO is about a day because we replicate all the changes between the offices at night, so we don't use our primary lines during business hours. And our RTO is actually even less because we have a server ready to go here in Madison that can, all we got to do is mount up the copies that are here in Madison and throw them into DFS. It takes about 15 minutes. All the iSCSI stuff's already set up and ready to go. So really, the RTO got minimized a lot, and the RPO is a lot more foolproof and more predictable.
How automated is this process?
Day-to-day, it's very automated. I don't have to, unless I'm upgrading something or applying a patch or something like that, the stuff pretty much just runs. I check on it once a week to make sure that everything's good. There's pretty good reporting, so I can go back and look at the week to make sure it's okay. And I've also set up like a monitor where I have each of the servers run off a script of what's going on. And then I create a web page from that that'll really quickly show that if there's a problem, if there's snapshots not being recorded or whatever, throws up a big red sign so then I can go check it. But typically I don't have to.
So it sounds like you architected this backup and recovery service that you could deploy at each of your remote offices. Is that the right way to think of this?
When we were setting it up, we were looking at it as a service, and as in we've got, a particular data set. We know who's kind of in charge of that and watching over it, and what are the services that they need for that. So we went to the people who basically own the data. Now our solution is volume by volume. You can't do like subfolders or anything like that. But we know who owned the volume, whether it be the manager of the whole office because it was the project data, and so that would be the appropriate person to talk to, or whether it's an SQL share and we talk to the IT person who's in charge of the DBA for that that server. And we asked them, what do you need? What's reasonable? And we let them know kind of what we could do, what was easy for us to do and hard for us to do, and kind of went from there, trying to figure out exactly what they needed.
Okay. Let me open up a little bit. Anybody have any questions or comments at this point?
Yeah, this is Nick Allen. Justin, what was your RTO previously?
Our RTO, we calculated it, best case scenario, at least a day. That's assuming that we lost an office. If we just lost a server, we were assuming that it was 6 hours or greater. And that was in some of the smaller offices. When you talk about our Madison office here, if we had to recover our main project repository, is about a terabyte and a half, and pulling that back off of an LTO3 tape drive, that takes quite a while. So we were looking at probably 24 hours there.
Okay, and what did you get rid of?
A lot of tapes. Basically, out of the offices that we replaced them with, total we got rid of about 308 tapes. 7 tape drives, 7 backup servers, 7 backup exec licenses. A lot of those things we would have had to have replaced, so that helped us out with our cost, because when you when we presented it to the CFO and we were like, okay, here's what we want to do. This is the system that we want to implement. Here's the cost. If you don't do it, we're going to have to replace this tape drive and this tape drive and this tape drive and this set of tapes. So you're going to have some cash outlay anyway. Now we proposed quite a bit more cash outlay, but it made the number smaller in terms of total differences. So that's pretty much what we got rid of, and we got rid of a lot of wasted time for people in other offices.
So yeah. You got rid of tape locally. Do you back up the tape still from Madison or even locally?
Yeah, we back up the tape in Madison yet. So there's a product called HyperTrack that they sell along that Falcon Store sells. Falcon Store is the company that we went and decided to go through. And it's basically a script that runs on the backup server, and it takes the latest snapshot of each of the drives that was replicated to Madison, mounts them up, and puts them in a mount point in a directory. And then we have a backup exec server running here in Madison that just basically goes and backs up that directory. So it gets all of the office's files all the way across the board. It just sees them as normal folders and files. So that helped us be a lot more efficient because you don't have the wasted tape. You know, if you have one tape extra, just in case you have overflow, you're only wasting one tape per set. Whereas if you have a different tape drive in every office, you know, that's seven extra tapes a week that you're doing just to make sure you have some overflow room. In addition, we have LTO3 here in Madison, and when we were doing backups into the other offices, they were all either LTO1 or LTO2, just being that they were older hardware and smaller offices. So we were able to decrease our tape count a lot. Actually, we didn't have to add much in Madison because we had enough spares. We just pulled it into that as well.
So can you paint a picture for us in more detail as to what you actually architected and installed at each office and in Madison?
Sure. I'll start at the server level. So you've got the remote server, and it's got internal DAS storage that it serves out to the clients, the number of file shares on it. On that server, there's an agent called DiskSafe. Basically, it's a asynchronous write splitter that runs on there. You present it with some LUNs from an iSCSI device, which is the Falcon Store CDP product. And then it manages splitting off the writes from the primary that are coming into the primary, then caching them a little bit in RAM, depending on the throughput, and then pushing them out to the LUNs that you present off the CDP device. From there, we take snapshots once an hour. We're able to keep those hourly snapshots back for 2 weeks. From there on, we keep daily snapshots for 3 months, weekly snapshots for a year, and monthly snapshots for a year and a half. That really helped us also prove to the CEO and the IT management that, look, we're gonna also be able to keep stuff historically long enough in each office that it'll actually be an improvement over what we had available for restores historically over tape, because tape we were only keeping a year back. Now, obviously, it's a lot more frequent, being that we could go hourlies for back for 2 weeks, but it's also that historical, you know, once a month copy that we had actually goes back further than it did than when we had tape. From there, we replicate the data from the CDP device in the remote office up to Madison, where it lives. We keep that data historically back 30 days, just because we don't need that many copies of it. And then on every Friday, all the data from those replicas gets put onto tape and stored for a year, which was our normal tape schedule. We just kept it in place because it was easier to do that than to try to justify why we were changing it. We'll probably change that eventually, but we just haven't wanted to start that process yet.
So you have a VTL in Madison, is that right?
Nope, it just goes to tape.
Okay.
So we figured we didn't need to install a VTL or deal with any of that because all of the replicas were there in Madison. We had two copies in the remote site. Things were fast enough for us in those locations, so it didn't really matter how fast it was going to tape here in Madison, because it was really—it's really our fourth copy of the data, so it really lessened its importance. And actually, since we've installed this, we haven't needed to use those tapes a single time. So, you know, the only time I put them in there is to check and do a quarterly check to make sure that everything's working fine.
And what's the disk at the local site?
The disk is another FalconStor CDP device. It's actually an NSS device. They're pretty much the same thing from as far as I can tell. And that's the target disk that the remotes replicate to.
So is that an iSCSI target?
Yep, it's iSCSI. And that's what makes it work so well with doing the backups. Basically, you hook up your backup server via iSCSI to, you know, the CDP device, and then you do mount volumes into just a empty folder on that server, and your backup exec doesn't, or whatever backup you're using, doesn't see it as anything other than a folder. So you don't have to do anything special on your backup software. You can have the simplest, easy to use backup software to just, you know, select that folder and tell it to back it up.
Okay.
I got two questions here. Justin, how many boxes did you put in at each remote office? You put in a CDP.
That's it.
That's it.
Yep.
So
yep,
you got
there's
your
one.
You got your two copies of data by still having the internal server DAS and
exactly.
The CDP, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. And then that replicates to the central site and goes on to what?
It replicates to the central site and goes on to another CDP device. So there's a box that we added in Madison that it goes on to. And then that's where it goes into the backup server and goes on to tape as well.
Okay. So the four copies are the DAS, the local CDP in the remote office,
mm-hmm.
the CDP / NSS in the central office, and that's copied to where for backup?
To tape once a week.
Okay, so
tape is our fourth copy. Yep.
And have you had to do any restores or, you know, major recoveries?
Yeah, actually, not too long after we implemented the solution, it was in the beginning of 2009. Our Columbus, Indiana office had a mass power outage because there was a hurricane that came through off the East Coast, and its remnants were up there and causing some major flooding. They were out of power for 4 or 5 days, and all we had to do, the system was so new that I was the only one who knew how to use it because I was the only one who had trained, and I hadn't gotten a chance to fully train everyone else. So my boss, and I was out for the day. I was at home with my son, who was pretty sick. So my boss ended up calling me and saying, hey, we've got this situation. And it took me about 5 minutes to tell him the steps to do to mount up a volume here in Madison and add it to the DFS share. It took him about 10 minutes to do it. He got it loaded up, and he happened to be in early that morning, so he was in at 7 a.m. And by the time all the engineers came in at 8, no one could tell that there was a difference or that site was down, because we had an exact copy of all of their data from that night mounted up into the DFS, and the whole structure looked exactly the same. The only way that anyone could tell a difference is that for the user sitting in Madison accessing those files, it was a lot faster because they were local instead of over the WAN. We just kept that mounted up until they got their power back. That evening that they got their power back, we replicated the changes back from Madison to that office, set everything back to normal with the DFS, and everything was there. So no one even knew that there was an issue. So that was a real true testament to the DR capabilities. As far as just normal restores, we make a concerted effort to offer our backups basically as a service to our users. We wanted to have a system where it was easier for an engineer or a CAD drafter or one of our office production staff to call us to get a restore from, you know, the last snapshot, the last hourly snapshot, then to redo whatever work that they needed to recover from. So we've had it where an XREF file in an AutoCAD document gets corrupted. And so it's easier for them to just call us and have us restore it than for them to just recreate that XREF. Or someone accidentally goes in and deletes a bunch of lines. It's a lot faster for them to just call us and get a recover than to go and, you know, spend a couple hours redrawing all the lines that they accidentally deleted and saved and couldn't get back. We do somewhere around 800 to 900 restores a year off of this system. And that just wouldn't have been possible off of tape. We didn't offer that. We didn't, we didn't put that out there as a service when we had tape. We basically said, it's for DR. If you have something that's going to take you more than a day or two to recover, you know, we'll get it back for you, but that's it. Now, if it's going to take you more than 10 minutes to recover, let us know, and we'll get it back for you. It only takes about a minute to do. So
how many engineers you got? Just
We're just about a 400-user company or 400-employee company, and we're about 65 to 70% engineers.
All right, so if it's 800 to 900 restores a year, that's 4 mistakes a year per engineer. Did I get that right?
Pretty much, yep. You know, there's a lot of engineers that we never hear from, and there's a lot of engineers that do a lot more mistakes than that. So.
Okay, and how long did it take to implement this solution?
You know, when we were going through it initially, I don't know if they were underestimating us or just trying to, sell us more stuff, but they wanted to sell us 2 days of professional services for installation per device. We basically said, no, we want you to show us how to do it. We'll get it set up. You know, we'll use you to get it set up in Madison, and then we'll deploy it in the rest of the places. It ended up taking about a day and a half to get it set up in Madison and do the knowledge dump. After that, it took about half a day, 4 to 5 hours to get it set up in each office. So basically, you just need to know the underlying, and we didn't at that point. We didn't have any iSCSI. You just need to basically know how to work iSCSI, and the interface that you do to set up the devices is very simple. And we were used to, we have a CX300 here, and we've had some other storage devices in the past that we were used to, and this was much easier than dealing with any of those devices and trying to learn them in the first place. So,
did you make any server changes to the remote offices, like another NIC or something like that?
We run Dell servers, and it just so happened that we had 2 NICs in each server. So we were able to use the NIC, the internal NIC. Now, because we are using the solution as a backup and not primary storage, we weren't worried about like TCP offload engines for iSCSI or anything like that. Because the amount of data traveling and the speed with which it traveled, we weren't too worried about. We also decided to not go with its own separate like switching architecture. We have them on VLANs, but they just run over the same switches as the primary, particularly because we're not that worried about the speed. You know, it's just incremental changes. All the fast stuff happens on the internal DAS storage, and that's just for backup. So we were able to save a lot of cost there as well.
Now, FalconStor also offers a journaling and journaling, mirroring, and snapshots. It sounds like you're just using the snapshot capability.
Yep, we use mirroring a little bit. I mean, mirroring's just for internal mirror, so that you have an internal backup copy. It's also really nice to defragment your volumes. So it came with our license pack. We use it to defragment our stuff, basically our snapshots. So, you know, every so often when the snapshot store gets big enough, it'll add on another 5 gigs or whatever. But it does run a little bit faster from what FalconStor has said if you defragment that. So the easiest way to do that is through mirrors. But, yeah, typically we just use the snapshots. We don't use journaling just because it's not as important to us to do that.
Are you using DDU?
Nope. When we purchased our equipment, we were on IP Store 5.1, and we're just now upgrading it to 6.0. But in 5.1, they didn't have dedupe that you could just add into the NSS/CDP solution. So we never bought the licenses. And so we decided after looking at the amount of storage that we're actually using that we didn't need it. If we were buying the solution now, we might have been talked into it. I could have seen that. But looking at the results of how our data is actually in there and the amount of space that it takes up, we wouldn't have needed it.
Okay, so it's not a, it's not something that you'd likely do in the near term. How big a shop? You mentioned, I think, 5 IT staff, but how about just in terms of terabytes installed, et cetera?
Sure. Across all the offices, if you add them all up and you add up our active archives, we're running about 20 terabytes of data. You know, our file, like for instance in Madison here, we're just under 2 terabytes now for project data that the engineers use. That's not including, you know, like users folders and marketing data and accounting data and all of that. So you add all those things together and the databases, SQL databases in the background and our SharePoint data, things like that, and we're running about 20 terabytes.
Okay. And so a corporate-wide dedupe just doesn't make sense because there's not enough data? Or, I mean, talk to us about the snapshotting and...
Sure. You know, each of the remote offices has their own copy of data, and there is some, you know, replication, I guess, or duplication of files between remote offices in Madison, primarily because each of the offices is connected with a T1. We've got riverbed devices to speed up that connection and to cache changes, which helps a lot. However, if you're working in a program called MicroStation, uses database files in the back end, it's like another CAD drafting situation, and it's always talking back to those database files. Well, even with the Steelhead, it doesn't speed it up enough to make it a positive situation for the user. So in those cases, we do have copies in each office, just to qualify that. We use snapshots in all of the offices, including Madison. And the beauty about those snapshots is it's only copying the differences off over time. And because DiskSafe uses FalconStor's MicroScan technology, if you make a change to the disk, it actually records them in 512 byte increments. So if you type in a couple letters in a Word document and save it, it might only be 512 bytes worth of change. And that's all that really needs to be recorded in that snapshot. Because of that, we've got a year back worth of snapshots now, and we're still seeing only about 50, the snapshot volume is about 50% of the size of the primary data. And that's with a year's worth of changes. So really, you know, dedupe as far as the backups are concerned, we're getting a much better ratio with our snapshots than we ever would with a dedupe situation.
Mm-hmm. Just not likely something that you could cost justify.
Right. I mean, if you were looking at your typical VTL and you took a full backup every single day, you'd have 365 backups by now. And you would be talking about having that backup store only be 50% of the primary data. It just doesn't happen. You know, you'd have like a 700% ratio, 700-1 ratio to get that. But by only recording the changes, and since some of the data on there has never even changed in the last year, we're able to get a lot better than like a VTL dedupe situation.
So did you do an ROI on the project, and do you feed that back to the CFO?
We didn't do a ROI per se. We kind of laid it out with rough terms. We decided that, you know, it's kind of ambiguous to do a ROI on a backup system because, yeah, it's going to pay for itself really quick if you have a major disaster and you can recover from it. But if you never have that major disaster, and hopefully you don't, it takes a lot longer to pay for itself. In terms of justifying the productivity increases by having our engineers be able to, engineers, CAD techs, whoever, to be able to get the backups from us and pull off, that's also a kind of an ambiguous number. We figured it was somewhere about 3 years payback, which means that, you know, it probably pretty much pay for itself in the 3 years that we had projected it out. But in this case of a disaster scenario, it would pay for itself very, very quickly. So it pays for itself over the term of what we expect the use out of it to be before we have to do another major outlay to upgrade it. And it basically makes the DR free at that point, was how we kind of pitched it.
Right. Well, here's wishing you a long payback period.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I hope so, too.
Other questions? People want to chime in?
About the bare metal
I totally missed that, but I think I heard something about bare metal.
Yeah, what's the question about bare metal restore?
Well, I'll just talk about bare metal restore a little bit. That was one of the things that we were really concerned about as well, because if you lose your server in your remote office, and you don't have an IT person there, trying to get enough CDs together to rebuild it, get all your apps installed, get everything back to normal, takes a long time. We do use FalconStor CDP. It works very well. Basically, what they have, you protect the C drive with DiskSafe, so you have a mirror of the C drive of that server. And then you can take a CD, put it in the drive, boot up to it, and basically boots like a Linux kernel. That allows you to connect that mirror copy as an iSCSI LUN, copies that whole LUN into the where your C drive should have been, but isn't anymore for whatever reason, and then you basically reboot your server, and all the blocks are there as they were before, so you can basically just boot into it. We did do some testing in terms of different hardware. You have to have very similar hardware to make it work. There's no built-in by default. There's no like hardware abstraction or anything like that. So you do have to find a server that's pretty similar. For us, we tried out different processors, same model line, like a PowerEdge 2950, with different processors, and that worked just fine. But if they had a different RAID controller, then we had issues because, you know, it would put the ones back, the blocks back the way they were, but not all of the RAID controllers saw the blocks the same way. So we had some issues there.
Can you boot off of the iSCSI backup?
You can boot up off of the CDP devices, but you can't boot off of the mirror from what I know. At least there's no easy way to do it according to...
Oh, so the C drive is mirrored.
Exactly. Yep. So you have a mirror copy of the C drive.
Sorry, yeah, that's what I meant. Okay.
Yep. And then you just basically mirror it back off the CDP device onto your new server once you've got whatever problem it was figured out. And then you can just boot up off of there. So, and it's a pretty nice utility that they give you to connect up to it. You go in, you tell it where the CDP device is, the IP address and whatnot, and some parameters, the IP address that you want the server that you're recovering to be, in case you need to change that for whatever reason. And you basically tell it to start copying, and it does.
Okay. Other questions?
Yeah, do you distinguish archive data from backup data? And if so, where do you keep your archive data?
Sure. We store our, I guess, archives to us is a little bit different than a lot of companies. We don't have an archive system that goes and pulls out individual files that haven't been touched. We kind of developed our own system where it would pull out old projects that haven't been touched. So it's not an automated system, whereas you've got two different copies or like a primary volume and then a pointer to a backup. It's we actually move the files off into separate storage. That goes on our CX300 on some ATA drives, lower big ATA drives is where we have our archives. And yeah, we have different backup policies for those because going with the whole idea of having it be like a service, we asked, you know, on the archives, how often is it changing and how often do we really need backups? Our archives are read-only except when we're moving projects into it. That only happens once every 3 months. There's a possibility that someone might request us to move something into there. So we decided, you know, we really only need to back it up once a month, and it's not that big of a deal if we lose a month's worth of data because not very, very little should actually be put into there. So we actually only put that out to tape. We don't put that on our CDP devices because we got in and decided it was too expensive to do that, or we can just throw it off the tape. In the event of a disaster where it wipes out Madison, our archives are the very last thing that anyone's ever going to, you know, think about needing. We're going to want our accounting stuff back up. We're going to want our active projects back up, things like that. But the archives are going to be the last thing that we recover.
Okay, yeah, that is a different view than a lot of clients have about archives, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we do it on a per-project basis. It helps out with, you know, legal discovery issues, that you know where all that data is. You have the same number of backups for each one. All of the project information is in the same spot. That was one of the reasons we did it. And we just, to this point, we haven't needed to go with the automatic archive situation where it pulls out, you know, old blocks or old files individually but still presents them the same way. So we have not yet spent the capital on that.
What's your main backup software?
The only backup software that we run now is one copy of Backup Exec. It sits on a PowerEdge 2850, not a real beefy server or anything. She's got a copy of Backup Exec on there. We use the Falcon Store software to mount up volumes from all of the copies of data that we have, and it basically copies them off of there. And then the only thing else that's not on the data frame or on the CDP device is those archives, and so we just connect to that file share and pull those as well, just on tape. So
can you talk a little bit about Falcon Store, the decision to go with Falcon Store, what else you might have looked at, and why you ultimately went the way you did?
You bet. We have looked at a ton of competitors. You know, one of the, I guess the biggest sticking point, there were two biggest sticking points of requirements that we have that we felt were really important, and that is having two copies of the data at the local site, or at the remote site, I guess you could say, in each office, that were easily accessible and that you could recover quickly. That was the main one because we looked at it, and there were a lot of places, a lot of products that you could do at the time that could replicate the data back to Madison off the primary, but didn't really have a way to, or an easy way, integrated way, that was the same product, where you could keep a second copy on completely different hardware in each of the remote offices. We felt that was really important because, and be completely honest with you, if you try to push 500 gigabytes back to the office after it's recovered over a T1, you're going to be sitting there for a week and a half just waiting for your data to come back, you know? And that just wasn't accessible or acceptable. We also looked at, so that was our first concern. Our second concern was the historical copies. We wanted to be able to have at least the same amount of coverage we did with tape as far as historical copies in that office. And so that means we had to keep copies back at least a year. And so that also took out some of the competition. We stayed away from VTLs because we felt that the big issue with those is that if you have a disaster, and you have to rebuild your your server, then you're still going to have to install some kind of backup software. And then you're going to have to run a restore of all that data, which is going to be a lot faster than tape, but it's still going to take a while before you can access your data. We wanted something where we could access the data right away when we had the disaster and didn't have to sit and wait for a restore to happen. That really shaved down a lot of the competition. We were left with the Falcon Store device, a NetApp device, and RepliStore from EMC. We kind of cut out RepliStore because we didn't want the overhead of trying to take care of one more Windows server at each office. We also felt that they weren't as expandable, I guess, because we would have needed to, our existing backup servers in each office didn't have as much capacity as the primary, so we would have to buy all new servers just to handle the backup capacity, and that really wasn't something that we wanted to do either. So that really made the cost of a software-only solution like RepliStore rise up because we needed the hardware on the back end anyway. Another problem that we had with them is that their snapshots were based on VSS and essentially shadow copy. We had had problems with shadow copy on really large volumes that have a lot of activity, basically where it's a known issue that they'll corrupt the page pool and blue screen out your server. The only way to get them back is then to delete your shadow copy store. That doesn't really work out real well for us if we want to keep those historical copies because there's no way to push them back back over. There also was no bare metal recovery option with RepliStore, so we stayed away from there. NetApp we basically stayed away from because they couldn't provide the whole solution. They could provide devices in each office. That basically was an iSCSI SAN, the same way the FalconStore CDP devices were. They had a lot of the same technology on them as well, but they didn't have the equivalent to DiskSafe, where it manages the write splits between the primary storage and then going to the backup storage. We would have had to gone with a different vendor for that, and we really wanted to have one vendor be able to supply the whole thing so that when we had to call them to support, there was one number, one company to be responsible for it. You didn't have to go back and forth pointing fingers or anything because, you know what, it's all your guys' stuff. You have to fix it. So that basically was the decision to go to FalconStore at that point.
Okay, great. Other questions before the wrap-up question?
The replication, can you basically say without Riverbed, essentially this wouldn't really work?
Actually, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. When we originally implemented the system, we had decided to use the Riverbed appliances, and that caused a lot of animosity for my network guy because we were worried that with the amount of data that we were going to end up pushing, it would clear out the cache, and it would effectively make it less effective by having a high turnover in the cache and not storing as much data that the users needed. After we implemented it, it was pretty obvious that because FalconStore has this microscan option where it sends really small blocks anyway, now we bypass our Riverbed devices so that the cache doesn't turn over as much. And we don't, we basically exempt the traffic that goes in between our FalconStore devices from the Riverbed. We push about 21 gigs total from our remote offices to Madison. And that's from the 7 offices that have the devices, and some of them have 2T1, some of them have 1T1. But basically that microscan shrinks it down enough that we haven't had to worry about it at all. We see the other thing that they have built into the FalconStore devices is compression across the line. So you can compress the data that's going out even after the microscan. And when we do that, we still see that it's we're getting about a 50% compression ratio. So over we're pushing 6 megabit over 2 T1s if you don't count the compression. So no, we don't use the riverbeds for that at all.
Wasn't there a on the initial seeding of your remote device to the home? I mean, isn't that a big deal?
Yeah, that was a big deal. There's nothing you can, no other way you can say that besides it was a big deal. They had talked about possibly doing something where you have the device local, you sync it up, you get the device back to the main site, you sync it up then you send the device back to the remote site, and then you only send the changes that happen in the middle. But gosh, I would think that the shipping costs on that would be pretty crazy. Plus, you got someone at the remote site gotten to pull that device in and out of your rack and stuff. We didn't want to do that. The initial sync took a long time, especially for some of our bigger stores. Our biggest remote office is Joliet, Illinois. It took them about a week and a half to get the initial sync over. What we were able to do is schedule a throttle on that replication. Basically, it said at 6 a.m., throttle the data back so that it can only use about an eighth of the T1. So really not much data going back and forth at all, but it kept it alive to the point where, you know, we didn't have to start over. Then at 6 o'clock at night, we said open up the throttle, use the whole pair of T1s. There's actually a pair of T1s that go to Joliet. Go there, and then, you know, at 6 a.m., pull back again so that we didn't affect our users. And then over the weekends, of course, it ran the whole time. That is basically what got us through. That throttling, that scheduled throttle, basically is what made it so that we were able to do that initial sync.
And that throttling, the scheduler is built into the Falcon store?
Kind of. They have, you can throttle on the Falcon store device through their interface. If you want to schedule it, you basically go into the Linux. The Falcon store stuff all runs on a Linux kernel. You basically just putty into the Linux install and set up a cron tab, like a scheduled task. And that's where we told it to set up the scheduled throttle.
Okay, so the scheduled throttle was through the cron tab, but the device itself, I mean,
yep.
Theoretically,
the device itself was, it's,
say, I mean, do you have a permanent throttle on it, so, or do you have other like network quality of service stuff so that doesn't essentially drown your network?
We still have throttling going right now on a scheduled basis, just so that it doesn't run during the workday. At night, we let the whole thing open wide up. We do have a lot of QoS on our routers between offices. We run VoIP and we run video conferencing over our WAN. So those things all have their own QoS policies set up. But we do at night when our replication happens, we do open the devices up and just let them go all the way.
And
aside from a QoS on the router.
Okay. Do you happen to know the devices? Is it using TCP, UDP, or something other? Is it easy to secure?
Yeah, you can use either TCP or UDP. If you have any devices, which you wouldn't have now, but any devices that were before version 5, they all used UDP. Now they use TCP. You can do encryption between devices. We run our WAN. We don't need the encryption because we have MPLS. So we don't worry about the encryption in between the offices as much. If that was something that you were worried about, they do have an encryption on there. I don't know. Since we don't run it, I don't know what kind of overhead it has on it. But
Whoever asked that question, can I have your first name at least?
Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Was there a follow-up on that, or are you finished?
I think that's it. Thanks.
Great. Other questions before we wrap? I wanted to ask you, Justin, what advice you would give to your peers before we close.
Sure. I guess, you know, when you're justifying, when we were justifying the situation, one of the things that we did was we tried to figure out how to leverage the backup and DR for additional business value. Basically, that was what came into opening it up to all of our users to just, you know, try to help them as much as possible. And that extra business value would really, you know, it helped justify the purchase beyond just being a backup. Because you're talking to your whoever's above you or, you know, your the owner of your company or whatever. And if you haven't had a big disaster before, like we haven't had a huge disaster ever, I'm going to knock on some wood right now, it's hard to say, well, if you had that disaster, this is what it would cost you. They'll come back with saying, well, we haven't had that disaster, so I don't know how much I want to spend on this. If you can say, well, if you have your disaster, it'll cost this much, but if you also spend this money right now, we can provide this and make the company better and provide an improvement to our users aside from just a disaster happening. And so that improvement will happen all the time, and you're going to get that value right away. I think that helped helped out a lot. Another thing I would do, I would recommend, is to plan out your capacity plus 50%. That's pretty much what our snapshots are for a year. It's about 50%. However, that's for file shares. If you have a database, like an SQL database or something like that, especially if you're running backups from SQL, you're going to have a lot more usage. There we're seeing about 120% snapshot versus the actual size of the LUN. You got to remember that if you're writing a file, and it, even if it's the same file you've already written, if you don't have dedupe and you take a snapshot of that, it's one for one in your snapshot. So whether you copy a data or copy a file or you delete a big backup file and then you recreate that backup file, that's one-to-one on your snapshot. So beware for those things. And then the only other thing is, you know, everyone likes to say, and I've seen it happen on some local companies here, is that Murphy's Law will kill your DR solution. So try to make it as automated as possible, and that's really one of the things that we were going for too. Take the human element out of it.
Excellent. Great advice. Thank you very much on behalf of the Wikibon community, Justin. Justin Bell of Strand Associates. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing your experiences with us today. So thanks very much.
Hey, thank you. I was happy to do it.
I wanted to thank the other Wikibon members who contributed today. Nick, appreciate your questions, and apologize to the gentleman who barely got his bare metal question in, bare metal restore question in. Hope he can listen to the audio to get his answer if he dropped off. Fred Moore, thank you very much. And Michael, thanks for your discussion around replication and the initial sync. So as a reminder, over the next 24 hours or so, we'll have up on Wikibon 6 research notes pertaining to the call today with user actions. So look for those. Feel free to hit it, edit, and improve the pieces, or put up your own piece, or even write a wiki tip. We'll also be producing a podcast of this call, and we'll be sending that out as well. So thanks for listening today, everybody, and thanks for being a Wikibon member. Bye for now.